This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
Hello and welcome to Duck Snort Baseball Podcast. I'm Greg Nix.
I'm Joe Weber. Psych, I'm Waylon McQueen.
Psych, I'm Joe Weber.
We got a couple of jokers.
It's going to be a silly one.
It's going to be wild, wacky, fun today on Duck Snort, folks. We do have a good show coming up in just a little bit. Our guest is Justin Volman, who heads the Collegiate Baseball Scouting Network, and he is going to give us a little preview of the MLB draft, I think, which is coming up in a few weeks.
So they play baseball in college, is that what you're saying?
Yes. Some do, not everybody. you wouldn't know, having dropped out of school in the third grade.
Yeah,
but
I dropped out.
Yeah, some people play baseball in college.
Oh, okay.
Some of them go on to the major leagues. Justin.
Name one. See?
Vlad Guerrero. Oh, wait, shoot. No. So we haven't actually talked to him yet. So I can't promise that talk will be good, but
yeah.
I have a very strong assumption, presumption that it'll be
Let's
good.
Get some sound bites of you saying, "Oh, that talk about this was good," and then say a bunch of different things.
Oh, good. Yeah.
And then we'll edit it later.
Yeah.
All that talk about pitching, base running, stadiums, conferences.
Omaha.
All right, that's good.
Yeah. We don't need to finish that thought.
No, that's good. No.
Before we get into baseball stuff, we should give a shout out to our network, Boardwalk Audio. Always very appreciative to them. You can support Boardwalk by visiting DuckSnorePodcast.com. Click the Support Our Artists link. That'll take you to Amazon. Shop like you normally would. Boardwalk and DuckSnort get a weensy percentage of that. So please do that. Also, a big shout out to Off the Bench Baseball, our distribution partners. They are publishing great stuff. They had, I think published daily this week, all kinds of good stuff. And Waylon and I are now in a GroupMe with our Off the Bench cohorts about baseball. So we'll be talking with them even more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My first comment was, first Red Cy Young, here we come, when Matt Harvey got traded there. Because the Reds have never won a Cy Young.
That's pretty wild. They've had some really good pitchers.
Yeah, it was the Reds and the Mets, and then R.A. Dickey came along. Oh, no, wait, Seaver won some, so it wasn't the Reds and Mets. Mets didn't have a no-hitter for a long time.
Wait, didn't Gibson pitch for the Reds, though?
No, he's a Cardinal.
A Cardinal, okay.
Their best shot was probably, like, Jose Rijo.
Yeah.
Or probably some people in the 70s, I don't remember. But, yeah, they've never won one.
Matt Latos.
Or Cueto, I guess, was pretty good. I don't know how close he actually got.
Edinson Volquez had a crazy year for
him. Oh, yeah.
We should mention, of course, that today is we're recording this on Mother's Day, so we're all wearing our pink podcasting gear in support of Susan G. Komen Foundation, just as Major Leaguers do.
Boo.
You guys don't support?
Susan Komen's like a corrupt.
Oh. Why are you wearing pink then?
They copyrighted.
I didn't buy it from her.
Yeah. They copyrighted that color pink.
Oh.
They like skim so much, like barely any of that money goes to cancer.
Yeah. Oof. It all goes to Komen's
purse.
Hair.
Yeah. Keeping her hair pretty.
Collecting hair.
I wonder if MLB knows that or not.
I don't know. They're all in the same pocket.
Well, anyway. Sorry I made that stupid joke, because now we're talking shit about a cancer charity.
Yeah, sorry about
it. I mean, I'm very anti-cancer, but...
just not anti-Komen. Or you are anti-Komen. So we were going to give today... There wasn't a ton of huge news this week. Like, there was the...
there was one boring no-hitter.
There was a no-hitter in Seattle. Actually,
in Toronto,
but James Paxton of Seattle.
Yeah.
Speaking of Seattle, Robinson Cano is out for several weeks with a hand injury that just happened.
Those Mariners. They're like
those
the
Buffalo
Bills
Mariners.
Of baseball.
Yeah, a little bit.
Nothing ever works out.
Yeah.
I don't think it's incompetence, so it's not like the Browns.
Right?
I feel like they're competent. Well, they try things that seem competent.
They did have incompetence for a while. I mean, they made that famously bad Eric Bedard trade.
Oh, that's true.
where they traded Adam Jones and Chris Tillman for 1 year of Eric Bedard, who promptly like blew out his shoulder or something like that. But that guy hasn't. Bill Bevacy, I believe, was the GM then, and that he. But they you're right that the Mariners are also known for like losing their best players and stuff like that. But with the lack, I guess, of huge headline news, we were going to talk a little bit about the AL Central because we felt like, no, we haven't been giving them much love lately.
Yeah. I guess the other big news is that Ichiro retired.
We talked about that last week.
I thought we talked about him getting... Oh, yeah, we did. Never mind.
I wasn't even here, and I know that.
I thought we talked about him getting 3,000. I was like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. Pujols got 3,000. You're right. We talked about it last week. I forgot.
We talked about him getting 3,000 on the Mariners last year, week.
I'm an idiot. I'm an idiot. We did. We talked about it a lot last week.
So we were going to make our season preview picks right now, division winners.
Yeah, we haven't done that yet. And you know what we should do? I just thought of this. We should do a thing where we have like a slogan for every team.
Oh, yeah. Great idea. Great idea. No, we were going to talk AL Central a little bit because weird year for the AL Central so far. A lot of bad baseball being played.
The Indians,
I think that's fair to say.
As of this recording, the Cleveland Indians are in first place and they are one game above 500.
And 2 days ago, they were one game below 500.
Yes.
And still in first place.
Yes.
Because, I mean, the White Sox, okay. I truly don't know where to start with how bad the White Sox
have
been.
They're pretty bad.
Only slightly better, the Royals. The Royals are the only team the White Sox have beaten, really. And then Tigers actually surprisingly
Matt
mediocre.
Davidson has beaten.
Correct.
Yeah, Tigers have been playing decent.
I mean, they're still like five games under 500, but compared to what we thought their season might look like, fine so far.
I thought they'd be like the worst
Cabrera's
team in the
league. Having a good season.
Yeah.
But then the Twins and the Indians, the only teams trying to contend in this division.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The Royals are kind of trying to contend.
No, they're not. There's no way that they actually have... anybody in that organization has real thought of them being in first place.
No, Duffy and probably Soler and Moose are probably all going to, maybe not Soler, but Moose and Duffy they're out of there.
Yeah.
Get rid of Herrera.
Yeah. But like, so, I mean, this is a weirdly common theme around the league that we've talked about a little bit, which is the presumed powerhouses are struggling a little bit, with the exception of like the Astros and the Yankees now. But the Indians in particular are having a pretty poor year. And the Twins, they've been playing better of late, I think, but they looked pretty awful for about a month.
They were bad.
I guess my question to you is, will either team start playing better?
Also, we should note that the Nationals are playing better.
Yes, true.
I don't know. Like, I don't believe in momentum or, like, that kind of stuff. Like, you know, this is leading somewhere. You know what I mean?
You sound very religious right now,
I don't believe
dude.
In momentum. It's a bunch of hooey.
Only believes in...
You know, men wrote those books. Not like, you know, like the whole like momentum or like the whole relievers thing of like, it's a relievers mentality. If they can't come in the ninth, you know, I think that's bullshit. I think it's an excuse.
Yeah.
So but that being said, how motivated are the Indians to play super well? Like, they're going to win this division. They could win this division by winning 90 games.
Yeah. Or like, less, potentially.
Yeah, like not. I think that every single member of the Cleveland Indians wants to win every game and play as hard as they can. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, if you're the Red Sox or Yankees, or Astros or Angels, or the three teams in the NL East, your every loss starting, you know, Memorial Day is coming up. Every loss is going to start to be like a lot felt. But if you're the Indians, are you worried about the Twins? I'm throwing you a question back.
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, they haven't put much distance, despite
true.
The Twins' terrible season, they haven't put any distance between them. So, like, yeah, I would be worried. And, like, it's interesting to me, you know, not saying like, oh, momentum doesn't matter, which like in theory I agree with, but then you're saying like the Indians' mentality does matter. You know what I mean?
It's not the mentality. It's just that like I feel like they, I wouldn't be, if I was a Cleveland Indian, I would be like, we're fine.
I think at this point, like maybe like a week or two into the season,
yeah,
they would feel that way. And maybe they still do because Francona is a good manager and he's right, keeping them from panicking. But at this point, I'd be like, man, we made this World Series 2 years ago. We made the ALCS, or no, the ALDS last year.
But they had the best, and, or the,
but they had the
better,
yeah,
record?
This, yeah, I think the second best record. I think
they had that
the
like
Astros
20-something game win streak.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they're like, and now, oh, we're playing like shit, and like what, you know, I guess I would be feeling it.
I guess
in a way where I would just be disappointed so far. I mean, unless you're,
sure,
unless you're Kluber or Lindor, you know, who I don't know how much more they could be doing, but the guy,
yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah, they're playing amazing, but like the guys who are struggling, yeah, I'd be like, this is supposed to be a good team. I'm not playing well. I'm letting my team down.
Yeah, I'm not doubting that they don't want to win. Like, it, I guess it just feels like the Cubs last year where I was like, this team doesn't feel as good, but like I'm not super stressing the Brewers and like we're fine. And I feel like that gets you to limp through. Like, I feel like sometimes that you don't, sometimes I think there is something to be said for having a team like breathing down your neck. Like, you know what I mean? And other,
sure,
like, and if they don't feel like the Twins are breathing down the neck, and I guess to answer your original question, I don't think the Twins are going to be much better. So I think if you're, okay, an Indian and you're looking at the Twins and you're like, I think we're seeing what the Twins are and we can win this division playing about like we're playing or slightly better. Like, you're not, like, it's easy to say like we're not a 100 win team. And I think if you're a veteran player or if you're a certain kind of mentality, it's easy just to be like, well, we can get to the playoffs at 93 wins. And then everyone knows the playoffs is a crapshoot and you can turn it on then. It happens in basketball sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I think
you can phone in part of the season. It's just like, we just got to get like the 3 seed in basketball and then we can turn it on.
I think it's easier to do that in basketball, though.
I think you're right.
Baseball is such a rhythm sport,
yeah,
and it's such like an individual sport too.
Yeah.
It's like, and there's just less dominant players. Like LeBron James can do that because anytime he's on the basketball court, he's easily the best player on the court, and
yeah,
like in a way where it's very clear this separation between him and other players, like with the exception of, you know, a Kershaw or Scherzer or Kluber like ace, like there, that's generally not the case on a baseball field,
exactly,
even if you're,
yeah,
the most dominant player.
Well, yeah, Lindor can go 5 for 5 with 2 home runs and 3 doubles, and if those are the only hits,
yeah,
game,
right.
Like I'm not trying to sell them short, but I do think there could be something for said about like convincing yourself the Twins are bad and just being like, yeah.
Well, let's talk about the Twins for a second then. Like, is that a mistake to underestimate them? They did make the playoffs last year. They ostensibly improved in the offseason. They made like some good moves, fleshing out the rotation with Lance Lynn. And you know, they added guys basically.
Yeah.
And then you take into account Buxton's been hurt for a lot of the year. And when he's been playing, he's been bad. Sano's been hurt for a lot of the year.
Yeah.
So their two best players, arguably, I guess Brian Dozier maybe would be up there, but you know, like, I don't know. And they're also missing Santana. So
uh-huh,
they're missing, you know, 3 of their 4 or 5 best players.
Right.
So like to say, like if I were on the Indians, I would be saying like, we're squandering this opportunity to put a lot of distance,
oh,
between us and the Twins.
That's definitely happening. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, because the players that are playing poorly on the Indians, seem to be, because like Lindor's playing well, right?
Yeah, it's like,
and
like
Kluber's playing well.
Kipnis and Encarnacion have,
yeah,
been bad. I think
like Ramirez has regressed, right? Or has he been playing?
No, Ramirez is having a great year.
Oh, he is.
But
who else?
I can't remember it. I think Carrasco is having,
yeah,
like a fine year, but their other guy,
Brantley's
Danny,
been out,
Danny,
right,
something, their other
Salazar
is hurt. I don't know. I mean, maybe they're better than the sum of their parts right now, too.
I mean, I thought everyone loved Encarnacion signing last year. And I was like, I get why it's good, but I was like, he's obviously a regression case. Or like he's...
I don't know how obvious that is.
I thought so. Like he's like... It's not
just
like he's JD Martinez.
He's been better than Martinez for longer than Martinez. I think right. now you're just underappreciating Encarnacion, but that dude hit
but
like
they thought he's gonna like be like this game changer, and I don't think he.
I mean, he was like a 35 or 40 home run guy yeah. for like 4 years in a row in Toronto before they signed him.
Yeah, but that's not gonna last forever, and he's older.
Well, yeah,
and what's his name? Who'd they sign to play first?
Yonder Alonso.
He's not playing very well.
Yeah.
My point is I think that they don't, like Lindor, I think is their only, to me, on the offense, like bona fide superstar. I wouldn't put Encarnacion there.
I mean, you can make a case for Ramirez now.
Oh, well, last year, yeah, he had such a great season. But he played above his head last season.
Well, he's keeping it up so far.
Yeah, but my point is that it doesn't surprise me that some Indians players regress, and then if they have injuries... I don't know. I'm getting lost in my whole point. My
That's
point
fine.
Is that like
I guess like
it's not it's surprising. Yes, they have a great team. I'm not trying to sell them short, but it makes sense that if they have enough players have a bad year or get hurt, then
right.
like where's it going to come from otherwise?
I guess like and my point is that I think the Indians will start playing better, but like and winning more games, especially just because like they haven't played the White Sox yet. You know, like, I don't know what their schedule
yeah.
is, but, like, they
I
haven't.
I guess I don't know who they played.
Yeah, yeah, like, and so maybe they'll beat up on the Central a lot more, but, like, if I think, you know, the guys who are pressing this deep into the season, the Kipnises and the Encarnaciones, have got to be in a bad headspace. And then on top of that, oh, the team isn't running away with the division like we could be, you know, and that's on me, so that's, like, more of the weight. And I just feel like, you know, you can't take for granted that you're going to put distance between you and the second best team.
Yeah,
and so, like,
I see what you're saying.
An opportunity squandered might loom large,
yeah.
you know?
I guess what I'm saying is that with Kipnis and Encarnacion, I think this is the point I was trying to make. They're having bad years.
Yeah.
I think that I don't think they're a guaranteed bounce back.
Sure.
Like, Rizzo for the Cubs, switching gears, we're not going to talk about the Cubs, but he had a bad start. But I was never like, I'm worried Rizzo could bounce back.
Right.
But like Russell's bad start or when Hayward has a bad start, you're just like, this just might be what they are this year.
Yeah.
And so I think that the players that are having bad starts for the Indians aren't the players that I'm like, yeah, no, they'll probably bounce back. This is just a bad 6 weeks. Like it feels like, oh, maybe Encarnacion is regressing.
Yeah.
Or maybe Kipnis is also, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I was trying to get at, is that the players that aren't playing well aren't players I'm confident will turn it around. They might.
But you're saying, like, you know, that whether that happens or not, they're probably just going to take the division because they have enough good players that, you know, they'll win 88 games and that will probably be enough.
Yeah, and because they have Kluber and Lindor and Ramirez. And,
yeah, yeah.
And if
they
Brantley
do have the superstars
back, yeah.
that the Twins don't have, and for sure, especially on the pitching staff.
Everything I said about the Twins the Indians can apply to the Twins, only all of those player ceilings aren't as high.
Right.
Like, if Encarnacion does bounce back, there's no one on the Twins that could play that well.
Right.
So I guess that's why I don't have a ton of confidence in the Twins.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Anyway, they're it's a bad division, and it's weird.
Yeah, it's bad and weird, and...
But if everybody's healthy, the Indians could be very scary in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, if I was the Angels, I wouldn't want to play the Indians in, like, a wild card game or the first round.
Yeah. It's true.
Anyway.
They got high-end talent.
They got high-end talent. They got pitchers. And Andrew Miller, how's he doing? Soler just went to
I think he was on the DL for a little bit, yeah. too. I think he's back. I don't know. I don't have an encyclopedic knowledge, but...
I don't either.
But... You said we weren't going to talk about the Cubs. We are, in fact.
Oh, we are. Yeah, yeah. That wasn't like my attempt to steer it towards the Cubs. I was just using that as an example.
Right, right. But we
yeah,
did want
right.
to... Cubs, baby.
Joe doesn't buy it. So we were going... We decided to start a new project
new
here
segment.
On the Snort. We're going to go team by team for every team in the majors, and we're going to pick a favorite player and a least favorite player from franchise
That's right.
history.
All 16 teams.
All
Oh, is this not 1941?
No, it's not. Yeah. I know you have a favorite Philadelphia Athletic and St. Louis Brown. But we were going to start with the Cubs.
Yeah.
For our favorite and least favorite players
of all
in
time.
Franchise history.
Franchise yes. history.
Because this is a team that we're both, Waylon and I are both pretty intimately familiar with. One yes. as a fan, one as an anti-fan, I guess. I don't yeah. know. What's the opposite of a fan?
A vacuum?
A vacuum.
I like that, actually.
As a vacuum?
Waylon, who's your favorite Cub ever?
Of all time.
All time.
Oh.
All 7,000 years of human existence since the Garden
okay.
of Eden.
It's impossible for me not to say Ernie Banks.
Even though you didn't,
even though I didn't see him
watch
play.
Ernie Banks.
So
play.
here's what it is. Yeah, I'm going to do a caveat with this question. It's too hard. It's Ernie Banks because he's Mr. Cub. His presence around the Cubs was felt so much like until he died. You yeah. know what I mean? Like he was so much part of the organization.
Was he the first black player for the Cubs?
Maybe.
I
don't remember.
Been.
He didn't play in the minors. I know that. He went straight to the major. Like, because the deal with the Negro League team he was on was like, we're not letting him out of his contract unless he doesn't
unless
play in
for the
minors.
Majors.
Yeah. I think Ernie Banks was behind that saying, like, I'm
right,
not going
sure.
to go there. But his presence was, like, super felt, and it was a bummer. Ron Santo's a very close second for that same reason. Hmm.
Banks is Mr. Cub.
Banks is Mr. Cub. But Santo had, first of all, Santo
Santo's
was like a...
Santo's Mrs. Cub?
Yeah, he's Mrs. Cub. They were married for a long time. Did you not know that? Santo was the radio announcer, and he was nuts.
Right.
But he was great. And then, but also he had that like whole Hall of Fame thing where he was just definitely a Hall of Fame player and he wasn't.
Kept getting shut out.
Until after he died.
Oh, yeah, right.
So anyway, I think it has to be Ernie Banks, but I think that it's still fun. I'm going to answer. My favorite player I've ever watched is Mark Grace. I know he's a monster maybe off the field.
Yeah.
But he was always my favorite player.
I almost picked Mark Grace for my favorite Cub ever.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I liked him a lot when I was a kid. But I ended up picking Sammy Sosa.
Slammin' Sammy.
Slammin' Sammy.
That's a good one.
Yeah, just because, like, Sammy's performance during the Sammy years, and specifically 98, obviously, was the most fun thing about the Cubs that I can remember to me.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It was the easiest thing for me as a White Sox fan to just be, like, behind 100%.
Right, yeah.
And just, you know, just be in awe of this guy. And obviously, you know, much more complicated later on with steroids, and also apparently Sammy Sosa being one of the more bizarre humans on the planet.
Yeah, he really is.
But he just... to me, represents the funnest thing about the Cubs.
He was super fun to watch when he was good.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it ended sour.
I'm sorry to rush things along, but we are getting close to the end here, and we got to get Justin on the phone. So least favorite Cub, give it to me.
I think with least favorite, I know we're in a rush. I'm going to have a little thing. Least favorite, it's hard to pick someone that you didn't see play, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, so it's, I mean, how is it not Alfonso Soriano? Love Alfonso Soriano. Like I was
as like an all around sort of career.
I loved
holistic
him from the moment he became in the big leagues, and I followed his career, and I was excited to get him. Mm-hmm. The contract was atrocious, but he
almost immediately just tanked.
The
sort of.
Worst parts of Sammy Sosa were true about Soriano.
Yeah,
as far as like striking out in the worst spots and hitting home runs only. Like what people think A-Rod is what Alfonso Soriano was for the Cubs.
Yeah,
couldn't play defense. Hit a home run when we were up 10-1, you know, like that's when he'd hit a 3-run home run.
Right.
But like would strike out and was like, it like insisted on batting at the top of the order, and he's not a leadoff hitter.
I feel like he was on the Cubs for so long.
He was
also.
On the Cubs for
it
so long.
It feels like it was a decade. I'm sure it was only like five or six years, but it felt so
it
long.
It felt like so long. So that's that's gotta be my least favorite.
I almost picked Alfonso Soriano because it was just sad to watch him, but I picked Kerry Wood. As my
what?
Least favorite Cub ever.
Oh,
and here's why.
Greg.
Horrendously overrated pitcher. That every single year there would be these articles that would come out that said, who's better, Kerry Wood or Mark Burley? Like even, you know, after Kerry Wood was like an overpaid reliever, like, and Mark Burley was still winning 15 games, you know, putting up three or four win seasons.
Okay.
There'd be these articles in the Chicago Tribune about, like, who would you rather have? I was like, clearly Mark Burley. He just pitched a perfect game. It's obviously Mark Burley.
I think your least favorite player is the Chicago Tribune.
Well, that could be, but I'm just saying, like,
I get what you're saying.
What Wood represents to me is everything, like, that is overrated about the Cubs, like, paying way too much attention to a player who is only okay on the whole. Yes, Kerry Wood was like amazing when he first came up,
yes,
but like
I get it.
As a whole career, okay player.
Yes.
Kind of a disappointing player, in
definitely.
Fact. But like still hyped as a superstar.
Yeah. Did you, because there was the big anniversary of his 20th anniversary of his 20th strikeout game. Did you watch the highlight?
I didn't, but I should, because I remember you telling me it blew your mind.
Just set aside your Kerry Wood. It's like phenomenal.
I'm sure I'll appreciate it.
I think it was Grant Brisby, like ranked every strikeout.
Oh, cool.
It's really something great.
I do remember that game from when I was a kid, and this like sort of chubby blonde kid. It's like, or maybe just big. I don't know. I remember him being just like big though.
He was like, yeah.
And like a little like maybe like pudgy face,
yeah,
or something.
Definitely.
Like sort of like still teenager face almost.
I remember walking home after school because my friend who was a Cubs fan, we taped every game. And someone, I don't remember the timing, but we like found out he was at like 14 strikeouts somehow.
Oh, nice.
Like before we left school. And we're like, no one tell us more, and ran and like watched that game. And we're just like, what? Like
nice.
In awe of that game. I'll tell you this one thing. I know we have to call in like 2 minutes. Anthony Rizzo is fast climbing up my favorite.
Ah, I believe that. I like Rizzo.
He's, and
as
off
far
the
as
field,
Cubs go.
He is like a prince. I love Chris Bryant too, but Rizzo I think is top seven, at least, maybe top five.
Okay.
Moving up the list. And also, I had to mention Ryan Sandberg. He was my first Cubs love, like, to watch play. Okay. That was a lot. You picking the Cubs first was so hard.
Like, especially when we do the Padres.
We do the Padres. I'm going to talk for, like, 9 seconds.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Like,
all right. Well, yeah, we're about to call Justin, so we're going to take a little break, and we will be right back with Justin Vollman of the Collegiate Baseball Scouting Network. All right, welcome back to Duck Snort. On the line with us now, as promised, is Justin Vollman, the CEO of the Collegiate Baseball Scouting Network. Justin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on tonight.
Yeah, very excited. Can you just start out by giving a little overview to our listeners who may not be familiar? Just what is the Collegiate Baseball Scouting Network, and a little bit of history and what your role is there?
Sure. So I started the Collegiate Baseball Scouting Network about a year and a half ago. We're a third-party data provider for MLB teams. So since I started a year and a half ago, we were at 35 scouts last spring. And we've grown to 120 scouts located throughout the U.S. and Canada. We look for players that are not just Power 5 D1, but we scout non-Power 5 D1, D2, D3, JUCO, NAIA, and high school players as well. We collect a variety of different data points, so some of those traditional ones like scouting grades, but also a lot of advanced data points that you wouldn't be able to collect unless you were physically at the game, like swings and miss by pitch or hard contact each field, and different data points like that. So we're really trying to serve as a talent evaluator for MLB teams and help them find players that might get overlooked because they play for a D2 school or play in Canada or Michigan, and there's just not nearly enough manpower to see all these players. So we're really trying to help fill in those gaps. And not only that, we want to try to help college students and post-grads really get their foot in the door in the baseball industry. So we give them a chance to sort of build their portfolio and get some experience, whether that's in scouting or analytics or writing, while they're still in school.
That's cool. I love that idea. And like, it sounds like something that teams would be very interested in, of expanding their reach. I'm curious what sort of your background is and like how this idea came about.
Sure. So I've worked in a couple different areas of baseball. I worked for the Brewster Whitecaps of the Cape Cod Baseball League. I worked for Trackman Baseball at their headquarters in Stamford, Connecticut. I worked for the University of Alabama baseball team. So I've worked in a couple different areas of baseball, and I just saw that there was a lot of talent that was going overlooked. One story I like to tell is when I worked for the Brewster Whitecaps, it was a loaded team. That was the year that they had Nick Senzel and Will Smith, who was the first-round pick by the Dodgers, and then Jordan Sheffield, and just the team was stacked. Kyle Lewis was on the Orleans Firebirds, so there was just a very, very talent-filled year in the Cape League. But one of our better pitchers on the team was a pitcher named Tyson Miller, who went to a D2 school called Cal Baptist. And I was the scout liaison, so I was the intermediary between the scouts and the collegiate summer league team, the Whitecaps. And when Tyson Miller got on the mound, he's 6'4", 200 pounds, right-hander, throwing 93 to 95, and none of the scouts had ever heard of him. So it just goes to show that when these players sort of get the exposure and get seen by these teams, that talent really shines through. So he went from being sort of unheard of that summer to getting drafted in the fourth round by the Cubs. And so I really saw from working at TrackMan and working in different areas of baseball and the Whitecaps that there was just too much talent and just not nearly enough people to see them all. I've been a lifelong baseball fan. I grew up in Fairfield County, Connecticut, in the heart of Yankee territory. And I've been a diehard Red Sox fan my whole life. So that was definitely an interesting growing up, being just a Red Sox fan in the middle of enemy territory. So I've just always loved baseball for a long time, and just seeing how players, I love that when players get drafted in the 40th round or go undrafted and end up making that major leagues. Like Jose Altuve was a $15,000 signee out of Venezuela. I mean, there's just, the list goes on players that weren't the prototypical baseball player, but once they got the opportunity, they really shined. So I wanted to sort of help players sort of get the exposure that they deserve and make it based more on talent level than simply they just didn't have the opportunity to go see that player.
I have a question that's like related to that a little bit, because when you say that there are these players that are kind of diamonds in the roughs or standing out at these small schools, are there coaching staffs that you can also identify that's like, oh, this school that no one ever visits actually produces pretty consistently great players? So, you know, like almost putting schools on the map as well as players. Has that happened, or have you seen anything like that?
Sure. Yeah. So we're definitely going to, this is sort of our first full season of collecting the amount of data that we've done. So we collected data on about 3,000 to 4,000 hitters and pitchers so far this season. And we're definitely going to analyze the data and see, okay, these were the schools that really produced talent, that were draftable, that had success 3 to 5 years down the road. Because we're not just looking at draft eligible guys. We're looking at guys that are underclassmen or high school sophomores or juniors and guys that aren't draft eligible. So we hope to track guys from high school to junior college to the pros and really start to see, okay, these are the statistics that show success from league to league, from high school to college to the pros, and really hope to get like some of those schools on the map that do have that sort of talent, and even highlight the talent at schools that aren't necessarily historically known for producing prospects, because it really only takes one to get a school on the map. An interesting school that we actually just covered on our writing side of our website the other day was a piece we did on a school in Northwestern Ohio. They were, I believe, either a D2 or NAIA school, and their roster was one of the most international rosters I'd ever seen. They had 15 players that were from outside the United States, so from Belgium and Australia and Puerto Rico and the DR and really just all over the world, which in Canada, I mean, it was just such an international roster. So we're really trying to serve as like that conduit to really make sure that schools and players from all across the country really can get exposure and take their programs to the next level. Because I mean, it's hard for not just MLB teams to see all these players, but for college teams as well. I mean, a college coach in Florida, I mean, University of Florida can have all the resources in the world, but it's still expensive for them to send a coach to go see a guy in California or in Canada. I mean, that's expensive, and schools only have so much money, and school baseball programs only have so much money. So if we can sort of help players get seen on high school level or in the international level and help ferry them to certain colleges throughout the country, and help them. Maybe they're not ready for to get drafted in the MLB, but if they can spend a couple of years at a junior college or a college, they can improve themselves on the baseball field and also improve themselves academically and really help guys that might not have gotten the exposure through the perfect game circuit or through PBR and help them get to these schools that are looking for talent, but they just don't have the resources to find it.
So you mentioned that you're working with major league teams or organizations, I guess. How does that partnership work? Like, what are they engaging you for, and what kind of data are you hoping to deliver to them?
Sure. So currently we're working with two MLB teams in our first year. So we're really excited about that. The biggest things that we can do for them is, so at the beginning of the year, our MLB clients sent us like big prospect lists. So one of the teams sent us a list of 2,500 plus players. And we were by no, they didn't say that we had to get all those players, but we, that gave us sort of a good baseline okay, these are the players that MLB teams are looking at. So not only are we providing them multiple looks at players that are already on their list, but we're also helping find players that they might not have seen otherwise. So we actually found a kid at a school in Eastern Michigan named Max Schumann, infielder, and really talented, and just was a player that flew under the radar. So those are sort of some of the players that we look for to try to get MLB teams to go take a look at. And we provide them, so we provide video, velocities, and a range of data points. So if they don't necessarily put as much weight into our objective grades, like scouting grades, well, then they can look at our video, they can look at our velocities that we collect, or the range of the data points, like strike ball percentage, or swings and misses by pitch, and that different type of stuff, and say, okay, this person generated 15 swings and misses on their fastball, and it was like a 90 to 92 mile an hour fastball, I should go check him out. And really just trying to help MLB teams be there and record data when they can't get their scouts there. I mean, you could have three scouts in Texas, but I mean, they could miss 400 high school games could go on any given April night. So we're sort of trying to be their boots on the ground and really be their eyes and ears on these baseball fields all across the country and help them be there when they just don't have the time to be there themselves.
Sounds very ambitious in like a cool way, but I'm wondering kind of like, what are the challenges? What are the roadblocks in this?
Sure. So when I first started the company, it was really just trying to establish the network and try to find like-minded people that wanted to work in baseball and wanted to help players. And so that was probably one of the biggest roadblocks early on, but there's thousands of people that want to work in baseball. And so it was just a matter of getting the word out. So that was one of the roadblocks that we ran into at the beginning. But then as our technology is becoming more sophisticated, we use Teamwork Online for our job postings and different stuff like that. That's been really helpful in terms of finding applicants. Another big roadblock is simply trying to get in the door with MLB teams. I mean, MLB is a very copycat league, and for any new data provider coming on the board, coming up throughout the organization, it's just a matter of proving yourself. So we were lucky enough to get two MLB teams to take, or one MLB team took a chance on us before the season even started. And was willing to take a chance on our potential versus on our product that we were going to deliver. So we were really excited about that. And then we had another MLB team join us midway through the spring season. But we've had multiple conversations with 10 to 15 MLB teams. And really the biggest roadblock that we've run into is they've been just wondering, okay, can they actually deliver on this product? There's going to be a lot of turnover each year. Can they find the amount of scouting applicants that they need? Can they train them all? Can the data quality still maintain the level of quality that we expect? And I think that we've really answered all those different questions throughout our season. Our data quality has improved tremendously throughout this season. We've gotten the process down, whereas it's night and day from what it was at the end of January, beginning of February, to what it is now in the middle of May. We've collected data on over 3,000 players, which means that we've really returned on our teams and our clients' investment. And we're going to substantially grow. So we, out of our 120 scouts that we had this year, we're probably going to have about 50% turnover rate just with people graduating, getting full-time jobs, for whatever reason. And we encourage that. We really want to establish a network of people that used to work for my company throughout MLB. So we can create a network where people that work for us 5 years down the road, okay, well, they can go and contact our 25, 50 man roster that's scattered throughout MLB organizations and help them establish connections and look for jobs. So that's really been the biggest roadblock, is just sort of proving the concept to Major League Baseball teams throughout this past season. And now that we have two MLB teams on board, I think that those conversations will be a lot easier, and we'll be able to sort of show the value. So we're going to be expanding. We're going to be adding 150 new scouts, not just in the U.S., but internationally as well. So we have scouts in Canada, but we want to expand to Latin American countries, DR, Puerto Rico, Venezuela, as well as Japan and Korea. So we really want to become an international baseball data provider. And we've just in our past month of having the job postings up on Teamwork, we've had over 350 applicants. So the people are out there that want to work in baseball, and we train them all. We have a really strict application process to make sure that we weed out anyone that's not qualified. So really, it's just a matter of proving the concept has been the biggest roadblock in terms of just getting the business off the ground. But I've surrounded myself with some really amazing people in my management team, and they've really been instrumental in making the company what it is today.
You mentioned a lot of international countries, and those are all, you know, the countries people think of when they think of major league players, and that is seems like a no-brainer to get scouts there. But in kind of in the interest of what you were saying, trying to find the schools and other places that aren't as hyped, are there other international markets that you feel like, you know, that Major League Baseball can start penetrating beyond kind of the ones you just named in Latin America and Asia and Canada, where we're seeing already a pretty good flow of talent? Are there other countries out there that you feel like are up and coming or that you might expand to?
Sure. So our first ones are like the Latin American ones in Japan and Korea. I think Australia is definitely a rising one. I think that we're going to see a lot more talent coming out of there in the next couple of years. We've just seen, I mean, the Australia Baseball League is a very good league, and I think it's going to maybe in 5 to 10 years get to the quality of where we see the NPB and the Korean Baseball League. And I think that that could be an area where talent could come from. I really think as baseball continues to grow in popularity internationally, we're going to start seeing people from all over the world want to play baseball. I mean, we've seen in the past couple of years, players come from Europe and Australia and different places in Latin America that weren't traditional baseball hotbeds. And I think that we'll continue to see that as the game continues to grow internationally. I think Canada is a rising baseball power. I know that we've had a lot of talent come through Canada, Joey Votto, among others. But I mean, you just look at the draft top 100 this year, and I mean, Noah Naylor is one that's going to probably be a surefire first round pick. And there's tons of Canadian talent that's just coming up through the ranks in the youth and the high school rankings. So I think that Canada is really going to be one where teams will put substantial resources in terms of their international scouting budgets or their even their domestic scouting budgets, since those players do go through the draft. But honestly, countries, it really changes. I mean, the DR, Puerto Rico, those are the big name ones, the Latin American ones. But year to year, I mean, it's just hard for a scout to go and cover an entire country. I mean, domestically, major league teams, they have really a big scouting network. They have scouts, but even it's not enough to cover the United States. But if you send, say, if you maybe have two scouts cover the DR or Venezuela or Colombia, I mean, that's a whole country that you're asking one or two people to cover. And there's just no way that you could see all those players. And one thing that we're really going to emphasize when we're scouting internationally is we want to help players go from internationally, say they're not ready when they're 15 or 16 to get signed by an MLB team, but maybe as they mature and get older, well, let's get them on the radar of college programs or junior college programs, so they can go over from Venezuela or Colombia or Japan or Australia and maybe get a college education or junior college education, and then get drafted into MLB organization as they physically mature, and help them instead of, say, go sign with an MLB team for $10,000 and burn out in 2 years. Well, if they go through a college program, get nutrition programs and strength training and learn English and a college education, so they can, maybe if they don't end up making to the major leagues, well, they can go back to their home countries or stay in the United States and really have building blocks for a stable career, whether that's in baseball or whether that's in something else that interests them. So that's one thing that we're really going to establish as we continue to expand internationally, is trying to get some of these international guys on the radars of U.S. college programs and really help establish pipelines from these different countries to schools in the U.S. to really help them out of the players that maybe aren't the top known guys in the DR or Venezuela, help them get noticed in college programs throughout the U.S. and really help improve them both personally and professionally.
Justin, we're almost out of time. I do have one last question for you. I know that you are sort of focusing on breadth of scouting, but with the MLB draft coming up, I'm curious whether you have your eyes on anybody in particular to look out for as far as like teams' first rounders. I mean, I don't know a ton about college baseball, but I know Casey Mize is sort of the big name on the board right now with like Brady Singer and Nick Madrigal and some other guys right behind him. So I'm curious who your number one choice would be and who like maybe a dark horse would be that our listeners can keep an eye out for when drafts rolls around in a few weeks.
Sure. So I think probably if the Tigers go for the safe selection, it'll probably be Casey Mize. He's the big name SEC pitcher. But if they make a deal with a college, high school hitter or high school pitcher for an underslot value, I could see someone like Jared Klinik going number one, someone like that. I know Noah Naylor's been flying up draft boards. I think that those two guys are two high school bats that could make a lot of noise on draft day. Maybe not guys that are as well known or as high profile as SEC guys, but guys that might be in. I know Jared Klinik probably is definitely going to be in a conversation for that one overall. And Noah Naylor's been climbing from top 30 to maybe top 15. So it'll be definitely interesting to see come draft time sort of where guys come from, whether it's small schools, whether it's big SEC programs, or whether it's high schools in Canada or the U.S. So I'm really excited for the draft and hopefully see a lot of our players that we've seen get drafted.
Cool. Well, Justin, thank you so much. You mentioned that you are looking for more scouts. If anybody listening out there is interested in joining the Collegiate Baseball Scouting Network as a scout, visit cbsscout.net for more info. Sounds like a very cool and ambitious company. And Justin, we wish you all the best. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on.
All right. And we will be right back with a little bit more Ducks Talk.
All right, that's another episode of Duck Snort.
The Snort!
Thanks to our guest Justin Volman of the Collegiate Baseball Scouting Network. He's the CEO. Seems like a big thing.
Yeah.
Like physically large, like a big thing.
Spanning the globe.
Yeah.
I am shocked at how ambitious it is, but like in a good way.
Definitely. Very cool. Yeah. It sounds like a cool thing. If some kids get exposure that normally wouldn't, I'm all for it.
And if people get their start scouting.
Yeah. That's cool too. And speaking of that, if you're looking for they're looking for team members. So if you are interested at all, go to CBS Scout or cbscout.net and, give it a shot.
Give it a shot. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Thank you once again to Boardwalk Audio and to OffTheBenchBaseball.com. Definitely check both of those excellent organizations out. Thank you to Moonbounce for our transition music. Follow us on Twitter at DuckSnortPod and leave a review. Man, I just killed the biggest spider now. Using Waylon's shoe.
Use my shoe to kill a spider.
But I multitasked it, didn't I? I was like still giving all the plugs and stuff. Yeah.
The shoe was still on my foot.
Yeah, I took it off Waylon's.
No, he picked up my foot and slammed my foot onto a spider.
Anyway, what a great note to end on. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of Duck Snort. Can you tell?
Boardwalk Audio Podcast. For more information and shows, visit BoardwalkAudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.